Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one because buying behavior is 100% changed, and the seller is less trusted than ever if they ever were trusted. So like even speak for myself, actually, like when I buy, yeah, I'll look at the company, I'll go on the website and all of that, but I will also just ask my network, I'll ask people I know, I'll go into Slack group, I'll get feedback that way. So I think there is going to be this interesting transition with people targeting testimonials from almost like micro influencers, people that are well known in that space, and running that as ads and kind of magnifying the message that way. That gets a little dicey as well, right? Because then it's a pay to play. Like there's issues there on the B2C side. But I do think we're going to see that transition that way a little bit.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang. Hey, we're going to get ready for a good discussion today because we're going to talk about testimonials and storytelling and how they go so wrong so many ways and how to correct that. Because we have Dustin Tizek on the show today. Dustin, welcome.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, before we get into our discussion, we're going to hit on five, maybe even more reasons why, you know, testimonials fail, you know, and the opportunities that are really present for a lot of different organizations to leverage these in a more creative and innovative way than they've ever thought about in the past. But before we do that, if you could, please tell the B2B DM gang just a little bit about your background.
For sure. Yeah. So I'll start now. I'm in a VP of revenue role, which oversees sales and marketing. But I actually started my career in sales back in like 07, selling textbooks, walking up and down universities, you know, old school, getting doors slammed in my face. And eventually started doing marketing tactics there, like mail merge back in the day with Outlook for anyone who remembers that back then. So made the transition over to marketing and spent the past 8 years or so at B2B tech companies, usually like seed, series A, smaller companies. And now I'm in a role where I get to do marketing and sales together and kind of blend the two, which is awesome.
And that's part of what we talked about. And I want to spend a little bit of time on that is there was a study that I was reviewing where it was saying how the chief marketing officer role for a lot of organizations is going away. Now, that doesn't mean the responsibilities are.
No.
What that means is they're changing the titles, they're changing the scope, they're changing all of that. And one of the particular titles that is starting to see a good fair amount of growth is the chief revenue officer role. So if you could help with a little bit of that transition, you know, and also talk about how that has impacted the organization that you're working for now.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm all for it, maybe biased because, you know, it's my role, but I do think that is the way to go. Because it should be one revenue team, in my opinion, like marketing, sales, and actually CS, which is kind of the forgotten link here a lot of the times. Yeah. But they drive the revenue. And I mean, to me, when I hear CRO still, I think senior salesperson, because usually they're from a sales background. But in my opinion, it should be based, like who you pick for that role should be based on your company DNA and background. So like if the company grew through outbound, you're a very sales-driven organization, for sure, put a senior salesperson there. But if you're more, you know, on the marketing side and you grew through inbound and content and that's still your major play, maybe a marketing person with, you know, an eye and a feel for sales fills that CRO role. So to me, it's someone who can oversee those three teams and start from, you know, demand gen all the way to retention, renewal, upsell. It's a lot of work. It's like a pretty big, you know, big shoes to fill and a big opportunity, but someone who can tie it all together is really what's needed.
So I think for me, as you're saying that, I'm starting to visualize in my head a customer journey or a customer roadmap.
Yeah.
I'm also starting to think about how some organizations, when you especially start talking about high ticket B2B type of sales, that journey could be over several years.
For sure. Yeah.
So I start thinking, well, is that really possible, you know, for a chief revenue officer to be able to be responsible for that type of roadmap versus a roadmap that maybe is only 6 to 8 months?
Yeah, I think, you know, for companies like that, you also need leaders in each of those positions that kind of roll up into the CRO. right? And then, you know, they can own their niche. But I do think you need someone who understands end to end what is going on. Otherwise, you end up with like marketing and sales silos, which I've experienced before, which is never fun. You know, they're misaligned, different goals. It's a nightmare. So I think that's the key. In our world, like, we're still a smaller company. We're 45, 50 people. And our sales cycle is more like 45 days. So it makes a lot more sense where I can tie all that together and work with CX and everything. But yeah, I agree. At a larger company, you need, you know, those step up roles basically in between to manage marketing, sales, and then roll up to someone who oversees it.
Now that's very important perspective, because otherwise people may take whatever we may say or share in our experiences and say, oh, that's what I need to do. No.
Yeah, exactly.
There's conditions and circumstances, and it ultimately comes down to the need of your buyer, your customer, or your product or service.
Yeah. I mean, with almost everything marketing sales, the answer is it depends, right? And I think this is one of those cases as well.
Okay. So, but I wanted to share that because I think it's vitally important in regards to the use and leveraging and return on testimonials and referrals and things mm-hmm. like that, because your perspective on that is really what makes us being able to identify how organizations fail so critical and important. So thank you for sharing. Now, you and I, and I'm, like I said, I'm sure there's more, but we talked about five, you know, reasons or causes that you see on a you know, frequent basis as to why testimonials just don't work for organizations. And so we're going to go through those and talk a little bit about those. But I think the first one, of course, is a great place to start, because we talk about them being general. So what do you mean by failing because your testimonials are just general testimonials?
Yeah, so I think sometimes people lump social proof into a bucket of like checkbox content, right? So it's picture G2 reviews if you work in the tech space. I need 50 of these because I need to rank. I don't really care what they say. Like, I just need volume. I think testimonials are entirely different. They need to tell a story and hit on very specific key points. And there's a point of diminishing returns if you're asking the same questions in every video, right? So if you're always asking the same 10 questions, all 10 videos are basically the same. Yeah, they're from different industries and there's some nuance, but you're not really covering all the question fears and doubts that your prospects have. It won't work throughout the funnel. So I think that's the key first is, you know, don't just ask generic testimonials, really think strategically, what makes this story special? Where do I want to use these videos? And then come up with your questions and go from there.
Well, as you're saying that, and talking about, you know, revenue officer, marketing and sales, metrics on these are so critically important. So I start going to think about, okay, well then which questions are actually garnering the most return benefit and impact for an organization? Do you find there's a particular question type of either a frame or example that seems to really be the most successful?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to where you want to use the video. So in our case, the way we think about it, if I'm going to use it, say like a LinkedIn ad to a cold audience, very top of funnel, just trying to expose us, I'm not going to have someone blabbing on about how great Testimonial Hero is. I'm going to have them talking about why testimonials matter to them, why it was an important thing, more category evangelism than about us. Whereas on the opposite end, if I'm trying to close a sales deal, we're going to have very specific questions that address, you know, exact questions, fears, doubts, objections that buyer might have and have a peer answer it. So like in our world, just to give a concrete example, we often get asked from larger companies, I have a video team, why do I need you? So we had HubSpot, giant company, give us a testimonial saying, we also have a giant video team in-house, but we work with Testimony Hero because XYZ. So that's like a niche topic that fits in certain deals, not all of them, but you know, sales has that, you know, quiver in their backpack ready to pull out and use.
That's a great example. Okay. So I think that also may lead into the how to use. Oftentimes a problem is, okay, so I have these different questions. I think top funnel, bottom funnel, and I think we're going to talk about funnel strategy here in a little bit more depth in a moment, but it's the how to use these. So if you could elaborate on that for us.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I compared them to reviews in the last one. I'm kind of going to compare it to case studies here as well, which is another traditionally checkboxy thing where, you know, as a marketer, having worked with sales teams, often sales will say, I need a case study from this industry, get it up, put it on the website. And then they use that same case study for a year and don't look at anything else. And sometimes it doesn't work. So I think that's where testimonials go wrong from a use case perspective is it's not a create one thing, set it and forget it on your website. It's, you know, create multiple pieces of content from one customer interview so that you can hit multiple stages in the buyer journey. Because let's be honest, like you're asking for 45 minutes usually of your customer's time. why would you spin up one 90 second video that lives on your customer page and gets 20, 30 views a month, maybe? So, I mean, that's what I mean. It kind of ties into the generic side as well. Like, it's all kind of related, but really coming up with that strategy of where you're going to use them.
So I think we'll, like you were saying, we'll find, you know, relationships and overlap in a lot of these, but
yeah,
ultimately we have to chunk the whole thing down.
Yeah.
Cause if not, you just have the mishmash and you have the problem with the whole return component.
So yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
So then that leads into that whole funnel strategy component. You talked about top of funnel. You talked about those mm-hmm. types of things. If you can elaborate on that just a little bit.
For sure. So we have like a diagram we put together that we work off of, which has pretty traditional marketing, you know, journey. So unaware, aware, consideration, purchase, retention, we even have on the end. And what we do first is we map out what's going on in our buyer's head at each stage. So what they're thinking of when they're unaware and not thinking about testimonials is very different from when they're thinking of renewing or thinking of purchasing. So we map that out first, and then we figure out what type of content we need and really match that message with the length and the medium as well. So let's say, go back to the LinkedIn example. So top of funnel demand gen ad, I'm not going to put a 2.5 minute video testimonial in front of someone. There's no way in hell they sit down and watch that. But I might put a 15 second clip, like one of our highest performing ones is just someone looking at the camera saying, testimonial videos have made a quantifiable impact of shortening the sales process. And, you know, it's quick cut, flashy, gets a message across. It's not about us. So I think that's the approach there, is mapping that out. And then, you know, you hinted on measurement a while back. I think that's a key component as well as when you're mapping out the journey. So the way we look at it and what I suggest to our customers is, if you're using them, to go back to the LinkedIn, to go to the well here a little bit, the LinkedIn ad strategy, don't measure it by revenue, because it's impossible to track who watched a video to revenue. Measure it by, say you have a named account approach that you're targeting. How many of those actually got to your website and, you know, consumed more content after watching the video? On the sales side, what percentage of deals were influenced by video X, video Y? So if you're using PeerSpot or something like that, it's, you know, easier to track. But, you know, you can track that manually as well.
Okay. So attribution being one of those things that you're referring to, and the clarity of it. And so I start thinking about attribution being so critical in today's world that it may cause funding and it may cut funding.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
So if you start looking at the metrics of all of these, you know, where do you find organizations, you know, oftentimes, you know, falling short? Just get a little bit more specific if you can on that whole attribution component and validation.
Yeah, I would say there's kind of two sides here, because I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with attribution, I think. So on the front end, sometimes you get people who are too hung up on attribution and expect a one-to-one, this video generated 8 leads, I need to measure this. And what that does is it kind of handcuffs them a little bit from actually creating the content they need and trusting it a bit, right? So I think that that's one end of it. On the other end though, like, make sure you have your tracking set up as best as you can, but also, you know, rely on self-attribution a little bit, self-reported attribution. So that's something we've seen with our videos where we run these on LinkedIn ads, we run them organically. It rarely tracks through. Like, usually it says Google brand or Google organic, but when we ask them, how did you hear about us? It's quite often, I saw a video on LinkedIn, or, you know, I saw this video testimonial here. So find ways to do that and get gut feel, but basically don't get hung up on dollar for dollar attribution on, you know, a content asset that is evergreen.
Well, then as you're talking, you know, I start thinking about, I'm not in your particular role or position within my organization, but I'm in a senior level role, but I'm getting that pressure from those people who are in your role or above, because they don't understand that. How do I defend that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the constant battle of all marketers, right? Is getting that across to CEOs. So what I've tried to do as a marketing leader is chunk out things that, you know, are demand capture one-to-one you can measure. So your Google Ads budget, for example, you can track that, but make sure you have a set amount of budget aside for actually building demand and finding ways to track, like I said, more interaction, getting in front of your target accounts, how much engagement there is there. But have that budget set aside so that you're not, it's not the same, it can't be the same budget as your paid ads budget. Like, it doesn't work that way. So you really need to chunk that out and get buy-in.
Okay. So then the other thing, going on to our fourth reason why testimonials may fail for organizations, is what you call skill set. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, I mean, you host a podcast, I host a podcast. Interviewing is a skill, right? And oftentimes, if people try to do it themselves, so I've done this before as a marketer, you know, a DIY testimonial, you get on a customer call on Zoom. It's not easy interviewing someone and making them comfortable, asking the right questions, digging in and asking the right follow-up questions. That's a skill set that, you know, not everyone has, everyone can learn, but I think that's key. Like in our case, we have people who interview full-time. They write questions, they interview, it is all they do. They are excellent at it. And what that results in is a more authentic testimonial and authentic conversation. So it's kind of like if I, you know, popped up a question on the screen and you had to answer versus if we were having a conversation back and forth and we cut out pieces and, you know, it's a lot more organic, natural feeling. So I think that's a key component. And then one other side on the skill set is after that, once you get the content, being able to craft it into a compelling story, that is not something everyone can do. And it's a bit of a repetition thing, right? Being able to pull out the key points, even small things like cutting out ums and ahs and transitions in between and when to use B-roll and when not to. Like there's a lot of nuance that goes into the both asking the questions and then creating a quality finished product.
Well, I'm starting to think about a whole lot of psychology that's involved with this.
Yep.
In order for us to be able to, you know, have the engagement, have, you know, the higher attribution rates, you know, there has to be some of this psychology that goes into how we get that, how we get the engagement, how we get the conversion. How much are you actually pulling in psychology into all of this?
Yeah, I would say a little bit. Like this isn't really psychology, it's more like video strategy, I would say. But the one thing that really works on the engagement front is starting with the hook, not the intro. So like having that modeled out properly where there is a key hook immediately. I think testimonials in general, like I'm drawing a blank on the Cialdini principle for this right now for some reason, but the whole social proof side, like there's something to be said naturally there about having someone like you dealing with the same problems and, you know, expressing their point of view on something. But when it comes to the psychology of asking it, I think really it's just trying to get authentic, natural, non-scripted, robotic answers so that it feels like a real person. And then you can get that relationship out of the video.
So I have to think, even when you start talking about certain, you know, customers and clients where their, you know, presence, you know, their, you know, engagement capabilities or you know, natural tendencies, you know, kind of come out and may render a testimonial as something that, you know what, we don't want to use that.
Yeah.
When does that occur?
It does happen from time to time. What we find often works is, you know, sometimes they'll flub people who aren't comfortable on camera, they'll flub the intro, tell us your name and where you work, and we'll skip that. Like, don't worry about that. We'll do that part at the end and then go back. So oftentimes our interviews are vastly out of order. And a lot of the stuff at the start is actually ends up on the cutting room floor because sometimes it takes 20 minutes for the person to get comfortable and get in a rhythm. There are times where, you know, it's hard. You're getting one word answers. It's difficult. So in the rare case, it's not usable. Most of the time, though, with the addition of B-roll and voiceovers, you're able to make it work. Because sometimes someone will say something that's brilliant. There's not a lot of emotion behind it. There's not a lot of power behind it. But if you can, you know, use that voiceover over B-roll that adds some imagery to it, it's a way to kind of actually use the footage.
Okay, so then our other area by which people often struggle is what we call the ecosystem. So if we start talking about the ecosystem of testimonials, what does that mean?
Yeah, so I mean, I put it like a social proof ecosystem, essentially. So we sell video testimonials, so obviously I'm biased there and I talk about video testimonials, but I don't think you can just use video, and that's not what we do, right? So I think you have to think about what type of content is this person going to consume at this stage? And are you hitting all the places where they might search for you? So yes, have testimonials, but we also run like image ads, like quote cards, essentially with, you know, a quick quote that appears. We will run screenshots of our G2 campaign, for example, for additional social proof. We put a focus on anywhere you can Google video testimonials, anything like that, that is a top 10 list, anything with social proof, anything with reviews, we want to be there. So I think it's thinking through that whole strategy of, A, how do people look for you? And then when they're looking for you at that stage, what length and what type of content do they want to consume? And making sure you have all those puzzle pieces built out and ready to go.
Okay, so in today's world, because of a whole lot of different factors, overwhelm, you know, stories of deceit and deception, you know, is there a worry that we could actually have a boomerang effect on some of these testimonials where people are just saying, you know what, how in the heck can this company have all these positive G2 ratings? They went over and they bought some outsourcer to do all this. Right. I mean, there's all kinds of different, you know, things that people think about that will cause them to pause and be skeptic. You know, how do we keep those things from actually occurring? That's the society we live in.
Oh, for sure. And I think, you know, especially with reviews, that's why they're not the, you know, end all be all social proof resource, because look at G2. Most of it is gamed in a sense. You know, there's a $25 gift card. Capterra is straight up pay to play, right? Like you pay to show up at the top. So that's why I do think any sort of anything where their name, face, voice is tied to it is more powerful, because people are less likely to, you know, put themselves out there. So if I'm going to give a video testimonial, I'm going to be a bit more truthful versus random G2 review that could potentially be bought. And especially with the rise of AI, like that's a little terrifying as well, with case studies, review generation. You know, you could just ask ChatGPT if you wanted to write a bunch of case studies or reviews and feed them data. So I do think that verification and having audio, video, and actually having the face and name there is going to be important.
So then I start thinking also about internal approvals. I mean, for me, being in a sales and marketing role for, you know, almost 30 years now, and you know, I know there's many times in the early days where I had to go through legal and had to go through a rigmarole, and I'm like, I'm not selling you my child. I mean, do we need to really get all these people involved in order to be able to do something like this? You know, because they don't want their name, face, likeness, all of those things associated with, you know, anything outside of their organization. And it makes it really difficult. Mm-hmm. Do you find that that is becoming less of an issue? Or do you find it within maybe certain industries or sectors where that happens to be still, you know, quite prevalent?
It depends a bit on industry is what we see. So, and we actually have a lot of customers in this space that manage to find people who can give testimonials, but like cybersecurity, anything like that, where people might not want to say what platform or what product they use to protect the website, because it opens up a vulnerability, right? So we do see that from time to time, and occasionally with larger companies, but because it's the person giving the testimonial, not the company, like the company is associated with them, of course, we see it less on the, you know, company saying our people can't talk to you, our people can't promote it. It is more on, you know, we can't share proprietary, potentially secret information, so you have to be extra careful. So in those cases, our customers will sit in and basically veto anything and say, hey, delete that, don't use that, delete that, and it waits for customer approval at the end. So it can take longer, can go through legal, but definitely still possible.
Okay, so If I'm looking at organizations, and I know, as you said, attribution was kind of difficult, you know, in some instances, but however, ultimately we are still looking for a return on our effort, return on our spend, return all of those ROI types of metrics. What have you seen on the low side?
On the low side, like return wise, you mean?
Exactly. We went through this effort and you know what? It just didn't necessarily work for us. Cause we always, we always hear about the, you know, success stories, but they're not all success stories, or
no, definitely not
to the degree. You know, what, you know, what is on the low end?
Yeah, I would say it falls back mostly on the ones who just put it on a customer page, right? They just create the video because it's still kind of checkboxy, you know, hey, we need social proof. Hey, we need voice of customer, which is 100% true. But when it is just put on the customer page, A, it's going to be really difficult to measure, and you know, be only a very small subset of your potential audience is actually going to go there, right? Normally it's way further down the line. They've done a demo, they're considering a demo. So that's usually when you get the least return, because they say there's 3% of people are actually in market at any time. And then probably 1% of those are on your website. So you're only getting, say you paid 10 grand for the video, you're only getting in front of a few hundred people potentially. So that's usually when it fails, when not thinking through where to put it, how to, you know, magnify the message.
Okay. So if I'm starting to look at also that maturation process and that maturation cycle, because I mean, there are certain organizations that they just don't have enough substance. They don't have enough in order to be able to go through this particular process. Have you found a kind of a sweet spot to start thinking about this?
Yeah, I would say start on the social proof and early. So not even video testimonials right off the jump. If you don't have budget, if you're not at that stage yet, but think through getting systems in place to actually get reviews, actually get customer research, even if you're not going to use it publicly. I would start that almost immediately. And I think a lot of companies are kind of building in public right off the jump and doing that and getting feedback and getting reviews. And then, once you have that basis and you know people actually like your product and there's a bit of social proof out there, that's when, I think you go through that maturation phase where you think, okay, now we're hitting our stride. We actually have budget to get our message out there. Then you can look at, video testimonials, multimedia, whatever makes sense.
Okay. So that kind of leads me back a little bit of a full circle scenario where we started talking about that chief revenue officer and the 3-year sales cycle versus the 6-8 month, 45 days, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I start thinking in certain instances where the testimonial really has very little impact. I mean, I have a 3-year cycle. I have a buying team. We're going to go through procurement. We're going to do all these other things. So you can flash all that stuff at me if you want. It ain't going to matter. I mean, do we find that to be a potential risk and, downside?
Yeah, I think in certain sales cycle, like you said, if it's a 3-year sales cycle or if it's an RFP process and they have to tick a bunch of boxes and they don't really care about your positioning or what your customers say. Yeah, I could see it not working as well there. I do think, during a longer sales cycle, you will see more objections come up. You will have more hurdles to overcome. So having those video assets to help there and having, basically a Google Sheet or catalog of them helps. That being said, there's always going to be some of those deals where it's, we want to know what you provide. We want to know how much it costs. We don't want to talk to you. We don't care about the messaging. Just give us that and let it be done.
Okay. So we can talk about acquisition. We can talk about the different revenue plays. But one area I started thinking about to see if it actually would have a particular impact in this area would be a win back scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So have you been able to focus in on win back? Is one of the ways that you've been able to leverage in one of those funnels?
Yeah. So something similar to that actually, where we call it like a revival campaign, which I think is similar to what you're talking about. So we do it in a couple ways. One is I upload an account list and a contact list of people who didn't buy, churn, did a demo, never talked to us, or customers who left. And then we upload that actually to LinkedIn and run ads specifically to them. Showing the testimonials, showing some new products we're launching, et cetera, to bring them back. In addition, we do a similar thing with email campaigns to our audience there to try to bring them back as well. So a little bit of both, actually. The approach there is not pure testimonial. Like, that's not the only asset we give them, but it does come in handy from a, proof and authority perspective, especially using it, through a remarketing campaign there.
Okay. So when I started thinking about the transformation that we've gone through in the past couple of years, a lot of things have just flipped on edge, and what used to work doesn't. When I start thinking about the future of the psychology associated with, testimonials, referrals, and things like that, where is this headed?
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting one, because buying behavior is 100% changed, and the seller is less trusted than ever if they ever were trusted. So like, even speak for myself, actually, like when I buy, I'll look at the company, I'll go on the website and all of that, but I will also just ask my network. I'll ask people I know, I'll go into Slack group, I'll get feedback that way. So I think there is going to be this interesting transition with people targeting testimonials from almost like micro influencers, people that are well known in that space, and running that as ads and kind of magnifying the message that way. That gets a little dicey as well, right? Because then it's a pay to play. Like, there's issues there on the B2C side. But I do think we're going to see that transition that way a little bit.
Okay. So this is kind of a little bit more detail on one of the things that I kind of asked previously. I was having a conversation with somebody and we started talking about this whole social proof component, talking about referrals and things like that. And I said, we do have to pay attention to psychology. If you look at how did Amazon explode? Well, Amazon exploded because they said, people like you who bought this also bought this and bought this. Do you want to package it, right? How did Netflix, when they exploded, Well, people like you watch this and watch this and watch this. I mean, that's how they actually, you know, really saw some hockey stick type of growth. Mm-hmm. And I was asking them, I said, well, when you go to Amazon and you're going to, purchase a particular product, I said, how do you go about deciding? He said, well, I look at all the 5-star ratings. And I said, no, you don't. He goes, what do you mean? I said, you look at all the ones. He goes, that's right, I do.
Yeah, that's true.
So this goes back to that whole risk thing of you got all these positives. I mean, how do I address, hey, we ain't perfect, right? You know, we're human. We're going to follow up. You know, how does that actually fit into this overall, ecosystem in regards to, you know, being able to attract people and convert?
Yeah, I mean, I do the same thing actually when I buy. And if there's not ones and there's a bunch of threes, that's all the better, because usually they're pointing out, you know, flaws and issues, but not completely trashing the product. So they're being honest, but they're not, you know, I had this horrible experience, I want to destroy this brand. So I think on the testimonial side, that's probably what you want to address. And it's this delicate balance, like picture yourself in an interview and you get asked, what's your weakness? You don't want to just say, I suck at this, because you want to say, I'm bad at this, but I'm improving it or working on it this way. So I think that's how you want to sandwich it a little bit on the testimonial side, where admit your flaws, admit who you're not for. Like say you only sell to SMB mid-market, you know, there's value in saying that and, you know, having that out there. So I think it's a fine balance. It's tricky, but I agree. You don't want completely positive, completely similar generic recommendations across the board. Actually address some of those objections and those concerns.
I think that's really important. It's not just the positive. It's also the negative that could bring the conversions and the value. And oh, hey, yeah, you can have attribution from that too.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Okay, man. Awesome conversation, Dustin. How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn's the best way. Dustin Tizek, search up my name. There's not many of us with that name out there, so you'll find me. And then if you want to check out Testimonial Hero as well, it's testimonialhero.com.
Dustin Tizek, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.